Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's race for the U.S. Senate is tightening, and Democratic candidate Patrick Murphy is taking full advantage.
The two-point margin is much smaller than the margin of error, so this is actually a statistical tie.
Donald Trump is raising questions about the integrity of the American elections process, but Florida officials are countering the claims, and they say voting will run safely and smoothly.
We can verify every voter's vote in this state, and concerns over voter fraud or rigging the election are completely unfounded.
And Florida voters seem poised to approve a constitutional amendment expanding access to medical marijuana in the state. That's coming up on Capitol Report. Good evening and welcome to Capitol Report. I'm Lynn Hatter in for Tom Flanagan. Republican Senator Marco Rubio has been leading in Florida's U.S. Senate race, but new polls show the race may now be too close to call. Regan McCarthy has more.
Just a few weeks ago, a poll from the University of North Florida showed Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy struggling with name recognition. Michael Binder oversaw the poll.
21% of the folks had indicated that they never heard of Patrick Murphy, and another 15% didn't really know whether they had a favorable or unfavorable opinion of him. That's a really big number a month out from a Senate race.
Perhaps some of that stems from Murphy's comparatively small ad presence in Florida. A report from Politico shows Murphy spent about $4.2 million of his campaign dollars on ads, while groups supporting him have shelled out $5.8 million. That's compared with Republican candidate Senator Marco Rubio, who has spent $9 million from his campaign on ads, while groups supporting him have spent $18 million. But the tides may be turning for Murphy. A Quinnipiac poll shows Murphy and Rubio neck and neck, and pollster Peter Brown says the race is too close to call.
Republican U.S. Senator Marco Rubio is getting 49% of the vote compared to 47% for his challenger, Congressman Patrick Murphy. The two-point margin is much smaller than the margin of error, so this is actually a statistical tie.
And since then, Murphy's campaign has been making strides. President Barack Obama took some time out of a campaign stop stumping for Hillary Clinton in Florida to praise Murphy. And Murphy has released a new ad attempting to tie Rubio to negative comments about women made by presidential candidate Donald Trump.
Marco Rubio stands by Trump and failed the show for Florida.
Murphy drilled Rubio over that issue during a recent debate between the two candidates. After the release of a video in which Trump is heard bragging about groping women, a trove of Republicans quickly distanced themselves from the party's presidential nominee, with some rescinding endorsements. But as Murphy points out, Rubio has said while he disagrees with Trump, he will still vote for him.
You see, there's been 16 U.S. senators that had the courage and the internal fortitude to not only disavow Donald Trump, but unendorse him. And you doubled down on your endorsement of him. So where's the courage? It proves to all of us that you're going to continue to put your own political ambition in front of what's best for Florida.
But Rubio pushed back, saying the presidential candidate Murphy supports isn't flawless either.
You are going to need people in the United States Senate willing to stand up to the next president of the United States when they are wrong on policy or when they are wrong on their behavior. And I'm the only one running that will. I have repeatedly done so when it comes to the nominee of my party. Congressman Murphy hasn't once broken with the nominee of his party. When she's been caught doing all these things, he has not once condemned her, not once pointed finger at her, has not once broken with her on any of her behaviors, or quite frankly, on any of her major policies.
Congressman Murphy.
The debate also touched on the candidates' voting and attendance records, as well as their stances on environmental and water issues. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is refusing to say he'll honor the results of the November 8th election. Politicos and historians alike say the statement undermines integral American institutions like credible democracy and peaceful transitions of power. Kate Payne looks at what Trump's remarks mean for elections officials in the Sunshine State.
Donald Trump is leveling serious allegations against the integrity of American elections. At the third and final presidential debate, Trump had this exchange with Fox News moderator Chris Wallace.
The loser concedes to the winner, not saying that you're necessarily going to be the loser or the winner, but that the loser concedes to the winner and that the country comes together in part for the good of the country. Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Hillary Clinton supporters are quick to challenge Trump's statements that the election is rigged, including former Florida governor and U.S. Senator Bob Graham.
What do the American people take away from this? What is their assessment of the state of democracy? I hope it's not that we are slipping towards a different America than we've known.
Even prominent Republican lawmakers are calling Trump out, like U.S. Senator Marco Rubio.
There's no evidence behind any of this, and so this should not continue to be said. And do I believe people should have confidence? Yes. And do I believe they should vote? Absolutely. And let me tell you what, let me add to this. This is a state that literally has millions of people who came here because they couldn't vote in the nation of their birth. It would be a tragedy if they gave up their vote here as well.
Leon County Supervisor of Elections and nationally recognized expert Ion Sancho says widespread voter fraud just doesn't happen.
Individuals have a greater chance being struck by lightning walking outside of a polling station than they do encountering individual voter fraud.
And the data backs him up. According to PolitiFact, voter fraud is incredibly rare. One study out of Loyola University found 31 instances of fraud out of a billion ballots cast. Sancho says the system certainly isn't perfect, but the decentralized structure of presidential elections makes them very difficult to rig. That's because the federal government doesn't run these contests. Local officials do, with trained staff and the help of countless volunteers, all overseen by governors and secretaries of state, many of whom are Republican. And on top of that, Sancho says,
because we have paper ballots in the state of Florida unconnected to the internet or Wi-Fi, we can verify every voter's vote in this state, and concerns over voter fraud or rigging the election are completely unfounded.
But the divisive nature of the presidential race is stirring up a lot of emotions. Elections officials are concerned about how voter anger and frustration might bubble over on Election Day. Earlier this summer, Florida Secretary of State Ken Detzner addressed a statewide conference of sheriffs.
I'm talking about the potential for interruptions and disturbances during the election period. And that's where I'm here to ask you to please help us, as you always have, in this election. It is going to be different.
But that concern is softened some in a written statement issued by his office this week. It reads, quote, "We have many safeguards in place, and voters should feel confident that their votes will be counted." Back in Leon County, Ion Sancho says each polling place is staffed with a deputy, just in case something comes up. But he says he isn't concerned and doesn't anticipate any problems on Election Day. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
And in 2 weeks, Florida voters will again cast their ballots for a medical marijuana initiative. Much has changed since the earlier measure failed in 2014, but Nick Evans reports the ardor of its opponents remains strong.
After nearly four decades of a war on drugs, Americans' opinion of marijuana appears to be changing dramatically. This month, Pew Research found 57% of Americans support full legalization. A June Quinnipiac poll returned a slight majority in favor of legalization as well. But it's the narrower question of medical cannabis where the numbers are truly striking. The same nationwide Quinnipiac poll showed 89% favor medical use, with strong majorities in all categories, whether political party, age, race, or education. But that broad shift is lost in the fight over Florida's medical marijuana initiative, Amendment 2. Here's an ad from the campaign against the proposal.
Get it. No prescriptions needed. There's even still a loophole for pill mill style pot shops. 2,000 pot shops. Too many pot shops. Too many loopholes. Vote no on Amendment 2.
Florida is the poster child for the medical marijuana movement's uncomfortable adolescence. Despite dozens of states approving medical or even recreational marijuana and growing consensus nationwide that it offers medical benefits, a vocal minority remain obstinate, and they're leading the charge against Amendment 2. Here's Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala.
I'm concerned that there won't be the ability for local government to regulate where these bud shops or pot shops are located. 2,000 of them is a lot of them.
The fight over the amendment has heightened these concerns about local control, with consequences for businesses operating under existing law. It's playing out in city and county governments across the state.
We're gonna have a little play on words here. The council pays me for my counsel. And my counsel was to establish a medical marijuana moratorium.
That's Milton Planning and Zoning Director Randy Jorgensen. The town of 10,000 sits in the far western end of the panhandle, and it recently approved a six-month moratorium on medical marijuana businesses operating within city limits.
The amendment that will be voted on November 8th will broaden the audience from approximately 50,000 current program participants statewide to 1 million. We'd be looking at one out of every 20 people participating.
And Milton isn't alone. Large counties like Hillsborough and major cities like Orlando have passed moratoriums of their own. Council members in Milton aren't outright hostile to medical marijuana, but it seems no one to rhetoric that the initiative is a prelude to unregulated recreational marijuana has rattled city leaders. Here's Milton City Councilor Jimmy Messick.
As far as medical marijuana, I'm not opposed to it. But as long as it is governed and is, controlled, regulated, but I'm not for recreational marijuana.
At a Certera Therapeutics cultivation facility on the outskirts of Tallahassee, it's hard to miss how tightly controlled the substance is under current state law. After the first gate, there's a quarter mile of rocky dirt road. Then there's a second gate, topped with coils of razor wire. There's no sign out on the main road, and the nondescript warehouse sits by itself in a large grassy field. Once inside, staffers give me a white coverall with no pockets. The facility's horticulturalist, James Chapman, explains, Certera's treatments begin with clones, cuttings from an existing plant.
Give them about 2 weeks with a rooting solution, and they pop out roots. You can see right here, these guys will be about ready next week.
When those sprouts wind up in pots, each one gets a unique barcode that will follow it through its entire life cycle. Chapman says they even track routine pruning.
So all of our trim, all of our green waste is weighed and logged into our software. After that, it's all destroyed through a trimmer, and then we compost it here on site. It'll actually never leave the facility.
After harvest, buds are moved to another room, dried, and then run through what looks like an industrial-grade Cuisinart.
We'll fill it up, mash it down, fill it up some more. It will basically just turn it into coffee ground consistency in probably 10 seconds.
That's Matt Peters. He handles inventory and compliance at the facility. The ground material is then moved to the lab, where workers extract and refine the plant's oils.
So what you wind up with over here is this honey-like substance.
And the heightened security measures don't stop at the plants. Both Chapman and Peters had to undergo background checks to get hired.
Two.
Well, what was that?
Two background checks.
Really? Okay, yeah. So and for everybody here, you have to get the background checks.
Right. That's right.
I got to take the fingerprints and do the level two background checks.
To Kim Rivers, CEO of a different dispensing organization called Trulieve, the security demands sound familiar.
Same. I mean, armed guards 24/7. Same thing. I mean, in terms of the locked security gate. It's all on lockdown. We have lab coats as opposed to coveralls. So pick your poison on that. I guess that's one difference.
Trulieve's Tallahassee dispensary was the very first one in the state, and Rivers says retail presents an additional set of security concerns.
So we have very, very limited product on hand, and the product that we do have on hand is not left in the dispensary overnight. It is taken into a more secure storage area.
With the campaign against Amendment 2 reaching a fever pitch, Rivers just shakes her head at some of the claims leveled by opponents. 2,000 pot shops? Rivers says Trulieve, one of six approved dispensing organizations, is moving forward aggressively. If all goes well, she hopes next year they'll have 15 retail storefronts. A far cry from 2000. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the Florida legislature passed a new law cracking down on balanced billing. So what's with that $25,000 life flight?
It's like they're trying to do something on the guise of there being wonderful people, and then you get a bill that just makes you shake your head of how can a company do that?
While Polk County is a rural, Republican-heavy district, some say there's a chance Democrats could pull together just enough to turn the county blue this election.
And I think organization is just as important as ideology.
And October is Blindness Awareness Month.
We made vast strides in attacking those attitudinal barriers and other barriers that have hindered individuals who are blind or who are visually impaired from fully participating in our society and in our workforce.
North Floridians are losing an air ambulance service, and patients with good health insurance are getting socked with sky-high medical bills. Jamash Reports Florida consumer insurance advocate Sharon James is giving a new medical transportation working group a year to resolve the problem.
Anthony Sanginito doesn't remember the 21-mile ambulance ride he took last summer because he wasn't conscious. But debt collectors aren't letting the 46-year-old property manager forget it. They call Sanginito's cell at least once a week, demanding $25,000.
It's like they're trying to do something on the guise of there being wonderful people, and then you get a bill that just makes you shake your head of how can a company do that?
Sanginito's ordeal began last summer when he felt a sudden pain in his stomach and had a friend drive him to Southlake Hospital. During emergency surgery for a perforated intestine, Sanginito went into convulsions and had to be airlifted to Orlando Regional Medical Center. He didn't realize he'd been to ORMC until he came out of anesthesia.
It was hours later in an ambulance transporting me back to Southlake Hospital.
Sanginito's United Healthcare insurance covered most of the bills, but Air Methods, the company that flew him, was out of network. United Health paid part of the $39,000 flight, but Sanginito was stuck with the rest. The practice is called balance billing. Consumer advocates are heralding a new Florida law that bans most balance billing. But legislators left ambulance services out of the legislation, largely because local governments play a big role. Insurance consumer advocate Sharon James says it's too early to say whether the group will recommend expanding a balance billing ban to ambulance services.
The goal at this point of the working group is really fact-finding, data collection, and just understanding the issue.
Air and ground ambulance providers say it's expensive to keep equipment and professionals on 24-hour standby. Air Methods, the company that flew Sanginito, just closed a base in Gadsden County near Tallahassee. Company officials say they couldn't afford the $3 million annual cost. Industry spokeswoman Amanda Thayer says Medicare and Medicaid pay just a tiny fraction of the cost, yet they cover most of the people who end up in an air ambulance.
7 out of 10 transports of this service are patients who have Medicare, Medicaid, or some other form of government insurance, or are uninsured.
As a result, Thayer says, providers either have to close shop or shift costs to privately insured patients like Sanginito. Deputy Chief of Leon County EMS Mac Kemp isn't calling it a crisis, but he says local officials are looking into how they can find another provider. Kemp is a member of the working group, and he says providers need to be able to bill patients.
I can't say that balance billing is the only solution, but it's right now today. EMS systems across Florida need balance billing in order to survive.
Florida Fire Chiefs Association President Dan Azzaretti is another member of the working group, and he agrees. He says insurance companies need to pick up more of the load.
Fire departments, you know, are doing this for 25 cents on a dollar. We have nothing else we can give. There's nothing else they could do. And if insurance providers do not want to pay more, that's where the problem lies.
Wences Troncoso, vice president of the Florida Association of Health Plans, also sits on the working group. And he brings the argument full circle. He says ambulance services are charging unreasonable rates and shouldn't be allowed to balance bill patients.
We believe this is the only way to put in place a check upon a non-competitive marketplace that has led to unreasonable and unconscionable balance billing against consumers.
But some experts predict that will be difficult. They say air ambulance providers are protected by 1970s-era federal airline deregulation. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Right in the middle of the I-4 corridor sits Polk County, rural and conservative and largely Republican. But changing demographics could mean a close election there for president. WUSF's Robin Sussingham has the story.
Presidential candidate Donald Trump got an enthusiastic reception when he campaigned in Lakeland recently, and he probably noticed that Polk County, to coin a phrase, is really huge. It's about the size of Delaware. And for the past 20 years, the Republican Party has dominated the political scene there. One of the politicians stumping at the Trump rally in Lakeland was native son Dennis Ross, U.S. Congressman for the 15th District, which includes the western part of Polk County.
It is so good to be back home in Lakeland, a place where my wife and I were born and raised, and I was elected 6 years ago to the United States Congress to make change. And I'll be damned if I'm going to concede this White House to the Democratic Party.
Ross played to the crowd, touching on some popular Polk County activities to show he knew his audience and warning of a Supreme Court under a Clinton presidency.
Those of us that are law-abiding, card-carrying, concealed weapons, gun owners, hunters, sportsmen, fishermen, all of us who enjoy the great outdoors will now have a liberal court to erode and eviscerate the Second Amendment like we've never seen.
There are plenty of opportunities for hunting and fishing in Polk, and a lot of land in the county is still devoted to agriculture and citrus. Phosphate mining has been a major industry here for generations, and it's not a wealthy county. The median income is several thousand dollars lower than the state average, while the poverty rate is higher. Parts of Polk are represented in the U.S. Congress by Republican Dennis Ross and in the state legislature by conservative Republicans like Senator Kelly Stargell and Representative Neil Combe. But until the mid-90s, Polk was a Democratic Party bastion, say longtime political observers.
My name is Bill Rufty, and I was political editor with The Ledger, where I had worked for 30 years. And I'm currently semi-retired.
Rufty says the Democratic Party controlled Polk County for more than a century. Polk sent three Democratic governors to Tallahassee, though the next likely candidate from Polk, Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, is a Republican. So what happened? Democrats did not know how to operate as the minority party, he says, and couldn't get their act together.
They were resting on their laurels, plus the fact that there was no control over who might run.
Lately, though, Rufty says the Democrats are starting to run better candidates and they're starting to get organized.
And I think organization is just as important as ideology.
Also helping the Democrats in Polk is the influx of Puerto Ricans into Osceola County, which is spilling into eastern Polk County as well. There are actually more registered Democrats than Republicans on the voter rolls.
It'll be interesting to see now whether or not the demographics have changed enough that Secretary Clinton will be able to win Polk County. In my own mind, based on the strong conservatism in the south portion of the county and the western portion of the county, I don't think that she will be able to do that.
But it will be close, Rufty says, and there may be enough Democratic votes in Polk County to help swing the I-4 corridor and thus swing the state. I'm Robin Sussingham in Lakeland.
Finally tonight, October is National Blindness Awareness Month, but Florida officials are also recognizing the 75th anniversary of the Florida Division of Blind Services. As Sasha Cordner tells us, during a recent ceremony celebrating blind and visually impaired Floridians, the organization also marked the importance of the state's white cane law.
I may have a visual impairment, but I haven't let it slow me down in the slightest.
Kirsten McCanns is an honor roll elementary school student from the Florida Panhandle, but there's one thing that sets her apart from her classmates.
I am just like any other normal 10-year-old fourth grade student at Crawford Elementary School, except I was born with a visual impairment known as ocular albinism. Ocular albinism is a genetic condition that affects pigmentation in the and nerves in my eye and make it harder for me to see. This condition affects the clarity of my vision and as well as my depth perception.
And while Kirsten says she's committed to living a normal life, her genetic condition makes some activities more difficult.
I sometimes can't do the same things that my friends are able to do, like playing basketball and other sports, because I have trouble seeing and responding in time.
But that doesn't mean she can't participate in sports. One of her favorite activities is cheerleading.
I spend some of my evenings and Saturdays cheering for the Vikings football team. Even though we aren't that good, this is my second year cheering, and the first was a little hard because I had trouble seeing what I was supposed to do. After I got the hang of it, I became pretty good, if you ask me. Some of my other hobbies are going to amusement parks with my best friend Kira, an obsession with cats and horses, and spending way too much time on my tablet and making and watching YouTube videos.
Kirsten says the use of technological advances, having support from her family, friends, and teachers, and working with a therapist has been a big help. She's also grateful to local services like Lighthouse of the Big Bend and state services like the Florida Division of Blind Services.
You are a true inspiration, so thank you so much.
That's Robert Doyle speaking during a recent ceremony honoring people like Kirsten. He's the director of the Florida Division of Blind Services through the Department of Education, which is celebrating 75 years.
Our division provides services to individuals from infancy all the way through old age. But one of the key services that we provide is career assistance. Last year, our agency set a 10-year record by helping 761 individuals to either get a job or maintain their job or advance in their job. And that was a big deal last year. This year, we took it a step further by beating another record by helping 841 individuals to gain or maintain their independence.
His division also celebrated White Cane Safety Day, which is October 15th, but he says the principles of the White Cane Law are something all motorists should abide by year-round.
The White Cane has become that empowering symbol, symbolizing independence for people who are blind. And so people are able to move about freely and safely as their sighted peers. So today we have to all do our part with motorists when we're on the road to be alert, to be aware, and to brake for the cane or the service animal, which often is a guide dog.
Meanwhile, in addition to awarding those who have helped blind and visually impaired Floridians, the Florida Division of Blind Services also recognized David Bigney, the event's keynote speaker. A victim of gun violence 20 years ago, the incident left him completely blind. Still, the Florida State University graduate has competed in multiple sports and became the first blind individual to complete an Ironman triathlon in 2005. That entailed swimming, running, and biking more than 100 miles. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter in for Tom Flanagan. Join us each Friday for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust. 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.